In a recent report, the World Bank has pointed towards slowing global growth and has also kind of alarmingly talked about a potential lost decade in the 2020s, that is from 2020 till 2030. Now, for India, it has said that we'll obviously be affected by this slowdown, but reforms that the government has already put in place have kind of mitigated that to an extent, but it has also said that this reform push needs to be accelerated. What kind of reforms are still needed for India? That's the question we're going to look at in this episode of Macro Sutra. I'm TCA Sharad Raghavan, Deputy Editor at The Print, and we have with us Radhika Pandey, Senior Fellow at NIPFB. Thank you, Radhika, for joining us. So now, Radhika, looking at the global economy, what is it that the World Bank has said?
So this new report of the World Bank is talking about the potential growth.
Right.
Now, potential growth is a theoretical construct where you talk about the maximum growth that any economy can achieve.
Mm-hmm.
So it's talking about potential growth of the global economy. And the key finding of this report is that the potential growth of the global economy has gone down.
Right.
And is likely to go down further from 2022 to 2030. That is this decade. It's likely to slow down further, leading to what is called the lost decade if certain reforms are not initiated
right.
on an urgent basis. So the main contribution of this new World Bank report is that it is talking in terms of medium-term growth or
mm-hmm.
what is called the potential growth. Now, what is potential growth is the maximum growth that an economy can achieve
right.
without triggering inflation. Okay, so something which the economy can achieve with full employment of labor, capital,
mm-hmm.
technology, that is what is the maximum growth that the economy can achieve. And this report is giving an idea about the global potential growth. So
right.
what it is saying is that the best potential growth the world economy achieved in the 2000 to 2010 decade,
right.
it reduced in 2011 to 2020, and it is likely to reduce further because of multiple shocks. It's talking about the COVID shock, it's talking
mm-hmm.
about the Russia-Ukraine conflict and the recessions induced due to these shocks.
Right.
And therefore, it's saying that unless reforms are initiated in terms of, you know, augmenting the capital,
mm-hmm.
Augmenting the labor force participation rate, unless and until investment rates are stepped up, it won't be possible to arrest this slowdown, and therefore it could lead to a lost decade. Now, it's talking about regional variations, but
right.
that's the key message about the global economy.
Right. And now, talking about the regional variations, so what is it saying about India?
So, for India, it's talking firstly as part, India is being talked about as part of the South Asian region.
Right.
And what the report is saying is that in South Asian region, the loss is not as grave as compared to the global economy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more or less the growth is relatively more robust in the South Asian region as compared to the global economy. But for India, one key concern that the report raises is about the investment rate.
Right.
So it is comparing the investment rate or the growth of investment, it is comparing for the decade 2000 to 2010
mm-hmm.
with 2011 to 2021. And it's saying that the average investment growth in the first decade, that is 2000-2010, was 10.5, and now it has almost reduced to half, to 5.7. And there it brings, the report talks about all the reforms that the government has initiated in terms of, you know, boosting the investment,
mm-hmm.
like talking about CapEx, the increase in capital expenditure, talking about the national infrastructure pipeline. So the report acknowledges that the government is doing a lot to boost investment at a time when private investment is anemic. It is playing a significant role, but these reforms need to be given a more accelerated push, and
right.
the bottlenecks in these decisions need to be addressed.
Right.
So it has given some suggestion that it's talking about, you know, giving a greater role to private sector. It's talking about making the financial markets,
mm-hmm.
India's financial markets, more deep and liquid. And that's all the reform that In the Indian space also, that we talk about that these are some of the financial sector reforms that have been initiated, but they need to be carried forward, particularly to see, you know, the infrastructure investment,
right,
where we see that National Infrastructure Pipeline has projected an investment of 111 lakh crore,
right,
for the next 5 years. So all of that money can't come from just central and state budget. It has to come from the market. For that, one needs to have a deep and liquid bond market. Government is doing, and a lot more needs to be done to, you know, make the markets more liquid. So that is the discussion that the report talks about.
Right. And now when we come to our discussion on what kind of reforms are possible, what are needed, I've kind of clubbed them into buckets, also going by the questions that we've got from the audience. So we start with one question from the audience, which is, can you talk and elaborate on financial reforms, the ones that are needed now?
So let's see what are the some of the reforms that have been initiated. So the Financial Sector Legislative Reforms Commission, the FSLRC, was set up by the government in 2015. It gave a report on the blueprint for financial sector reforms. It's a very comprehensive report, and a lot of government's financial sector reforms are being influenced directly or indirectly by the FSLRC report. So, for example, one of the significant reforms that we've already undertaken is the adoption of inflation targeting regime.
Right.
We know that now RBI is an inflation targeter central bank. So now we have one objective for the central bank. We have one target, which is in terms of CPI. So it accords greater transparency and credibility to the functioning of the central bank. So that's one. The other is on FDI, on foreign direct investment regime, and the entire capital controls framework, where we talk about, always we've talked about that India is a partially capital account convertible country, because there are still restrictions on the inflow and outflow of foreign capital.
Yes.
But in terms of FDI, we have seen a lot of reforms, and most of the sectors are in the automatic route.
Which means that they don't need government approvals before this happens.
They don't need government approvals. They are under the automatic route. And then another significant reform where we started a bit late, which is still in progress, is the IFSC, the International Financial Services Center, which is kind of an ecosystem of all financial services, financial service providers, like banks, insurance, fund management, other specialized services, and they are catering to foreign investors as well as domestic investors. We made more inroads into this only from 2019-20. So this is something that still needs to be carried on. A lot of, you know, capital control restrictions need to be eased. Taxation initiatives need to be eased, and they have been done. It's a journey. So that is one thing that still requires a lot of work to be done. And we are still far behind other IFSCs or financial services centers like Singapore or New York or London. But we are making progress. So these are some of the financial sector reforms that we have undertaken. The other is the announcement that was made in 2019-20, where the government said that, talking about strategic disinvestment, that they will focus on, they will keep presence, their presence in four key sectors, and in rest of the sector, they will go for privatization. So a lot of announcements have been made on infrastructure. A lot of announcements have been made. National monetization pipeline, which was again another initiative to, you know, garner funds from brownfield assets. You know, the assets which the government has, but they are not giving any continuous revenue stream. So you give to the private sector as on lease and get some revenue stream, which you can use for fresh capital investment. So a lot of such initiatives have been undertaken. Some are in progress, some are in pipeline, some require much more work to be done. But more work needs to be done on the financial markets and on, you know, to ensure that infrastructure financing can be undertaken with much more ease. So that is the some of the report.
So actually in that answer, you have answered several questions from the audience. One was indeed about the need for the development of the GIFT IFSC in Gujarat. We'll come to disinvestment. After that, I mean, talking about financial sector reforms, we can't ignore the banks.
Right.
So there, do you feel they've already done a lot in the banks? They've merged banks. They've cleaned up their balance sheets.
Yes.
in a big way. Is there anything else left for them to do?
So you are right. They have. So one of the reason when we talk about investment slowdown, one of the reason was the impaired balance sheets of public sector banks.
Right.
And in 2015, then the RBI undertook a comprehensive asset quality review,
mm-hmm.
and it nudged banks to acknowledge the bad loans on their balance sheets. And after that, there was a comprehensive cleanup of the balance sheets of banks, and
right.
now we see that NPAs are much, the non-performing assets or the bad loans are under control, not only for private banks but also for
the public sector
bank.
Yeah.
In COVID time, there was this fear that NPAs will shoot up, but that did not happen. In fact, the NPA ratio went down,
mm-hmm.
and it's likely to go down further. So that is one improvement in banking sector regulation that has happen. The other thing you talked about, the consolidation and merger of public mm-hmm. sector banks, the third thing which the government has talked in terms of strategic disinvestment policy, which the World Bank report also talks about, is the disinvestment of public sector banks, or
right.
the privatization. Now that is a very contentious issue, and the government as of now is going slow on that issue because maybe the timing is not perfect. There's already a lot of volatility and uncertainty. Government does not want to rock the boat at this time. But that is something that the government has committed in its various budget speeches. And that shift in thinking was very clearly communicated. Because,
yes.
in fact, even before that, there was no such communication. The government did not acknowledge that there is a need to privatize,
mm-hmm.
but at least there was this shift in communication that we need to think about privatization and strategic disinvestment. So, but that is one thing that is going slow. The other thing which we also talked about in one of our previous episodes is about the resolution mechanism
right.
of financial firms, given the kind of episodes we've seen in the US and Europe and elsewhere, where the resolution corporation comes in and takes over the troubled financial firms. So in our current regulatory architecture, we don't have that kind of an ecosystem. What we tried
yeah.
to do was through IBC, we tried to introduce some amendments to resolve the non-banking financial companies
yes.
that were troubled in 2018. But there is still a need to at least discuss whether we need to bring back the Financial Resolution and Deposit Insurance Bill
mm-hmm.
that was tabled a couple of years back. Is there a need? And is there a need to bring back by dropping the contentious issue? So that is something on the banking sector that
right.
They need to talk about. Also, because if you have a prompt exit mechanism,
mm-hmm.
that will also ease the entry of banks, because entry and
yeah.
exit happens in tandem. So
right.
if you have a eased mechanism for exit, that will free up capital and resources for new banks. The RBI will be in favor of giving licenses to new banks.
Right. And now moving from the financial sector reforms to other reforms, first let me say that we received quite a few questions about whether there'd be reforms or whether we need reforms in the judiciary and legislative parts of the country. And I can tell you right now, we're not going to take those questions. This is a purely economic and financial show, and we're not going to delve into issues that don't pertain to the economy. So we will move instead to taxation. Now, we have a bunch of questions on taxation. One is a tough one, which I don't know if we have the answer to, but I'll ask it. What about the direct tax code? It was in the news for some time, but we haven't heard anything about the same. Can we expect something about it maybe next year?
I don't think we can expect something about it in the next year, because then we have elections. So I think the government has introduced this new income tax regime in parallel.
Right.
So I think they would like to continue with that and introduce more incentives for people to move to the new income tax regime, rather than bringing in an overhaul of the entire direct tax regime. Of course, it is needed, but I think that this is not the time that the government will try to bring about comprehensive changes to the direct tax code.
Right. So basically, I mean, we don't actually know when it'll come. It'll come, but we don't know when. Then the other question is, do you think it's a possibility that one day petrol might be included in GST? And by petrol, I guess petrol and diesel. Can't the central government provide any incentives to the state governments in respect to this?
So there has been some questions raised on this, and the communication from the central government has been that, you know, if states are on board, they're ready to discuss, because the GST council has to take the initiative, the decision on this. Again, you know, petrol, diesel are some of the key sources of revenues for states through the value added tax, and also for the central government through the excise duty. We know that, you know, the excise from collections from petrol, including the cesses, the revenue generation has been quite significant over the last 2-3 years. So it is difficult, though it is very much ideal, because that will help in addressing the problem of inflation to a great extent, and it will help in you know, addressing the cascading impact of impact of high petrol prices on other commodities prices also. But right now, I think it won't be something which would be immediately addressed. It is well within the mandate of GST Council to talk about it, bring it, because it's not constitutionally forbidden. It's just that they have to decide the date when they want to bring this into the regime of GST.
And now we know, we've spoken before about how personal loans have been growing quite strongly, and within that, loans for motor vehicles have been growing quite strongly. Now, that could be possibly also because the taxes on motor vehicles are quite high.
So
one of the questions we have from our audience is that the taxes on motor vehicles are exorbitantly high. So do you think that the government should consider lowering this, because the price now, even for lower model cars, is quite high? It's exceeding 5 lakhs.
Absolutely. There is a scope to review the taxation because on automobiles, because it's quite high depending on the state of the economy, depending on the per capita income. It's quite high, and that's also visible in the composition of cars that are being sold. The entire motor vehicle segment has undergone a sea change, and that may also reflect a kind of a K-shaped recovery, because we are seeing growth of the sales are galloping for the high-end cars and not for the small and mid-sized cars. So one of the reason for that, one possibly could be that people are migrating, they are saving, or they are taking loans and moving. The other is also that people are not able to afford due to the high taxation rate. So definitely there is a need to review, and in fact many stakeholders have been talking about you know, rationalizing at least on the smaller segments cars.
So incidentally, you should actually check out a story done by my colleague Yutika Bhargav, where she has shown with data that people are increasingly choosing the higher end models at each stage. They are not choosing the base models, they're only opting for the higher end models. And so I guess then they're taking larger loans to pay this off. And so you should check that story out. It actually reveals a very interesting trend in how Indians are right now buying cars. And so now we switch tack again and we go to agriculture. I know that the farm laws are a very politically sensitive issue, but the need for reform in the agriculture sector remains.
Correct.
And so, I mean, do you think that there is a need to revisit, maybe not the farm laws in the structure that they were put forward recently, but is there a need for reform?
There's a need for reform, and but now the approach towards the reform needs to change, and there needs to be greater consultation, there needs to be greater communication, sensitization, some awareness programs for farmers, because there were a lot of misconceptions at that time that maybe the government is just taking away the MSP support completely. So I think the first attempt should be to articulate government government's intent more clearly, come out with more papers, more white papers, and do more communication with the states, going to villages, remote areas, have such awareness and extension programs to make them understand the need and the intent of reforms.
Right.
And also tell them that, you know, some of these are already in process, even though they are not, they do not have a legislative sanction, but they are already being implemented, because as of now also farmers have the option of either opting for the MSP regime or selling in the open market. And right. During the Russia-Ukraine conflict, we did see farmers selling in the open market. So it's right. just making that process more streamlined and more effective by giving it a legal sanction. So I think it's more is needed to make the people, the stakeholders, aware of the intent in a more simpler language, in a more maybe regional languages. More awareness programs are needed to then, so that they are passed with much less friction, and we do not see the kind of conflicts that we saw during the time when these were introduced.
Right. So that actually captures the various reforms that we are going to talk about. On the financial sector side, there the government has already done quite a lot, but there are some key reforms, like, you know, how we can get banks to exit easier, maybe revisiting the deposit insurance.
Yes.
And a few other incremental changes. When we come to taxation, again, there are several things that can be done, like bringing fuel into GST, but that requires the states to kind of come together and decide that this is what they want to do. Then there is taxation on cars, which are right now taxed at a very high level, whether that can be reduced. That also is something that the GST Council has to decide on, because automobiles are under GST. When it comes to agriculture, the reforms are maybe more at a nascent stage. You need a bottom-up approach. It's not incremental. You need a kind of a wholesale reform of the sector. When it comes to disinvestment, the government has already announced several reforms and several plans that they have. How quickly it goes ahead with them, that's obviously up to the government and up to the market conditions and up to the resistance that they face in various sectors when they try to privatize them. Before you go, I have one appeal to make before you. The reportage that we do at The Print, which is non-partisan, it is in-depth, it's well-researched, and this includes a lot of the ground reports that we do, where we go out and we bring you stories that other people don't report. This is intensive in terms of effort, in terms of time, and of course in terms of money. So I would appeal to you and encourage you to please subscribe to The Print so that you can help us do more of this coverage, to bring you more fair, balanced coverage. And apart from allowing us to do this, it also gets you some benefits, where you can write for us in our Your Turn section. You can write your own articles. You get priority passes in terms of the webinars that we do and some of the on-ground events that we do. And you get access to personalized newsletters sent from our editors to you, talking about the news of the day. So please do subscribe to us. The link is in the description of the video. And please help us. Thank you so much.